another episode of the Young Turf Podcast. Ahmed Ghafir and Mason Viner. Ahmed, it's a sad state of affairs. It's March Madness coming up. Really started last night, but really gets rolling tomorrow. And the Terps, well, we thought nowhere near it, but turns out they turned down an NIT bid, but a losing record for the second time since the 80s. And the portal window's open, and here we are on the next year.
Yeah, obviously, and I think, you know, it's I think a lot of fans kind of expected. And Maryland, of course, whether they were going to participate in the NIT or postseason, I think that was kind of a little bit of a tall task, you know, just in terms of, you know, a lot of the guys being ready to move on and, just kind of the state of it. But what kind of surprised me is the number of teams that end up opting out of the NIT yesterday. I thought that graphic during one of I believe it was one of the first four games, but just really disappointing to see that number of teams really opt out. And again, you know, the NIT, even in years past, you know, you kind of looked at it. And a lot of teams, you know, struggle to kind of get ready and get themselves hyped up for it. And you saw, you know, like Kentucky lose that first round, for example, years ago. But, I think that graphic yesterday kind of painted a pretty bad picture of what the future looks like for the NIT.
Yeah, it made it look like the NIT maybe has a year, two more at the most, unless something really changes for it. Because those are the teams, you look at that list, Maryland, Cal, Arizona State. I mean, those are the selling points of that. If you go back to the Terps' last run in the NIT, I guess it was the Alex Len team that made it all the way to Madison Square Garden, and they lost to Iowa. Like, it's Maryland and Iowa playing, you know, obviously Maryland in the ACC at that point. That's a game that, you know, people will turn on a Monday night, a Tuesday night, when between the Elite Eight and the Final Four. But I don't know about whatever it's going to be like South Florida against Belmont, for example, in that same spot. It's not going to be a selling point. And it shows, unless you're in that top tier, just like with college football and the bowl games, that's what the NIT has turned into. It's like a ginormous bowl game where guys are going to leave for the portal, and you'll see a team like Maryland this time next week. If they were in the NIT, they might have 8 available players. They might have 7 available players. That's not sustainable. And Coach Willard, and I'm sure everybody else on that list, saw that coming and knew that they were going to have trouble fielding a team.
Yeah, obviously. And like you said, you know, I think a lot of teams, they cited just a chance to kind of get going. Obviously, I think the transfer portal, with that officially open now on starting on this past Monday, and, you know, and guys staring at facing their own stay or go decisions, of course, you know, a lot of coaches cited just the ability to kind of get a little jump on things. And so I think that kind of begs the question, just kind of over the state of college basketball and, you know, portal dates, what needs to be moved, things like that, to kind of re-incentivize this postseason. I think they're talking about making the NIL, or doing like an NIL winner for the NIT in the future, things like that. So we'll see. But I think, of course, again, when you think about it from Maryland's perspective, obviously ending the season and after that Wisconsin game, disappointing game, obviously. I think you know, like we said, you know, Maryland declining that. Don't think it was too much of a surprise, but again, you know, I think it's missing out on the postseason 2 out of the last 3 years is not a trend that Maryland wants to make a habit.
No, not at all. And so the season is over. You mentioned it, the portal is open, and the Terps saw their first couple entries into it.
Yeah, obviously, first one was Noah Bachelor, who didn't seem to waste much time there. Galen Swanton Roger, he announced he was going to enter he just entered the transfer portal on Monday evening. So those are the first two. So now Kevin Willard has officially 2 scholarships to work with for next year. Still more expected, obviously. We'll see what happens with John Lamothe and Jordan Geronimo. Julian Reese, of course, that's the prize of the offseason right now until he makes his decision, you know, to see what he ultimately decides to do. Obviously, a lot of pessimism there, but and Jahari Long as well, who I think was expected to initially enter and had that just brutal injury in the last minute of that Big Ten tournament win against Rutgers. Feel awful for him, where it just derails what his entire plans were for next season as well, derails what really, you know, maybe next 2 years look like for him. So we'll see what happens with that. But again, you know, I think that this is was a difficult season. I think the results, the fallout following the season finale reflects that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, obviously a handful of guys enter the portal, and it seems like when you look at the list of players, and I'm going to say something that I'm sure people will comment on and love to hear, it seems like guys with just guys that had potential that just never panned out here. I thought CSR had a promising first year last year. Obviously, he has the picture that's been all over the place yet again of him dunking on Hunter Dickinson. But a guy with Grant Billmeyer coaching him that looked very playable. And at times this year, it looked the exact opposite of that. Noah Batchelor, you know, a local guy who Maryland gets. And yeah, he's a three-star recruit coming in, not some crazy, you know, but high potential in the sense of if Noah Batchelor can shoot, this team probably wins 2 to 3 more games this season. If he can even be a decent three-point shooter, what he was brought in to do. Instead, without that, never being the shooter that he was supposed to be coming in, never really progressing in almost any facet of his game. Yeah, he gets some minutes throughout the year, but another guy that just isn't there and doesn't, there really isn't a future for here. CSR, I kind of disagree with that, especially if Julian Reese jumps in the portal. He might be taking a step down in many ways with where he lands. And then you look at the next set of guys, you know, Jahari Long, I really am disappointed for him. You know, that was well known. If you read Inside the Black and Gold, if you really follow Maryland, that Jahari Long wanted to go somewhere where he was going to start next year and really get the chance to play the 30 minutes a game, the 25 minutes a game plus type situation. And like, he probably stays at Maryland, rehabs the injury, and then looks to either stay and play what will, I guess, end up being a sixth college year or seventh college year. Depending on how long that drags out, given the severity of the injury, you don't really know. Julian Reese, Jordan Geronimo, we'll see what happens there. But both of those guys, I mean, they're going to fetch some sort of NIL deal. Jordan Geronimo and Julian Reese can probably start in the Power Six somewhere. And we'll see kind of where things go with this. But it is just the state of college basketball. Guys that average 17 and points plus per game jumping in the portal left and right from the mid-majors, knowing that payday is coming, the big-time college basketball is coming, guys who didn't really make it out of high school, now there's second, third chance to find yourself, you know, kind of living out the dream.
Yeah, and I think you kind of hit the nail right on the head there, obviously with Noah Batchelor. I mean, I think he's a guy, like you said, you know, three-point shooting that was expected of him. And I think it was kind of, you know, when you look back at high school, I think it was kind of always a commitment that made sense, a guy that, you know, local guy that wanted to be in. And when you consider what Willard, his emphasis on the area, you know, again, you know, it's for your first commit, taking a flyer on an in-state guy that could potentially extend the floor, improve floor spacing, provide that outside shooting. You know, again, if you're asked to make that similar move today, you know, you probably take it again. Similar has been done in football as well. But again, you know, I think, you know, Batchelor, I think that's the one that kind of makes the most sense to fans. And, you know, I think we saw spurts from CSR, you know, even in, you know, those conference games where he'd only play 2, 3, 4 minutes, he would have, you know, a decent take offensively, or he would have a nice defense, at least on one or two possessions, but it just felt like it was still flashes. It wasn't spurts. And again, when you look at kind of just the makeup of the current roster, you have Manny Traore, who's obviously plays a little bit more of the four than the five right now, and Braden Pierce, who's coming off that redshirt year. He has a smooth stroke. He's really good feet as well, similar to CSR. So again, you know, when you look at Pierce and CSR, are they kind of redundant if both of them are active and available together next year? So I think that's fair. And obviously, you know, we'll see, you know. You know, Julian Reese, you know, he's going to get paid. He's going to get a bag, and doesn't, you know, for the last couple of weeks now, it doesn't sound like he's going to be someone that takes a discount or says, you know, oh, I'm willing to, you know, take a little bit less to go to the great opportunity. Like, it sounds like, and deservedly so, that he's going to try and prioritize that. So we'll see, you know, been a lot of pessimism. And after that Penn State regular season game, you know, a lot of rumors that were going around, and it was not looking good. So we'll see. Obviously, Wednesday afternoon now, he is still with Maryland, so we'll see how that shakes out. But I think that if Julian Reese is really going to be the only one where you look at and say that's a true hit for Maryland, and again, you know, Willard's definitely got his hands full. You know, replacing Jameer Young, Dante Scott, Julian Reese. That's a lot of production to replace from a team that didn't even finish above 500. So, again, I think Willard already has some guys in the portal that he's going to work on. But again, I think that this attrition, whatnot, I think is all kind of been brewing for a while now.
Yeah, it certainly is. And just going back to CSR for a minute, you know, I covered the, I guess, what is a bottom four conference in college basketball in the Atlantic Sun throughout college called Plenty of Games and ASUN Basketball. And a guy at CSR's level, he's a starter in college basketball at the Division I level at a certain place. So you also have to factor that in. While there are guys that are playing like the Juju Reese style of I'm going to go and chase the money, I'm going to chase the bag, I need to make money now, I'm probably not an NBA player, that realization, that's all probably coming true right now in the head of Julian Reese. There is the other side, the more Jahari Long side, the maybe more the CSR side of, I know that I'm probably not going to be a starter at Maryland, and I want to start somewhere and play. And there is NIL involved at that level. I know there's NIL in like Atlantic Sun basketball, and the only place where you're really not seeing it as much, it's certainly not the dollar level, but it is there. It's present in every single university and schools that are trying to compete and grow. But there are still those guys out there that want to play, and they'll take that step down to do it, and they'll find themselves overseas playing basketball or playing, you know, like the summer tournaments, big three ball, whatever it comes, there's plenty of opportunity for the guys that start to, you know, have a professional basketball career too.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. And I think, you know, again, you know, CSR, I think it'll be kind of interesting. You mentioned, you know, whether, you know, NJIT, Grant Bill Meyer, you know, that would be kind of an interesting development there. I think, you know, Bill Meyer, I think fans can kind of look back and realize the Bill Meyer loss and Skin loss, you know, you lose a guy in Skin who did a really beyond what he was able to do recruiting wise, you know, his reputation as a developer in the backcourt. And then Grant Bill Meyer just being a big man whisperer, you know, losing both those guys back to back in the same offseason, back to back vacancies to fill there. I think that, you know, to help rebuild CSR, you know, that'll be kind of interesting. So, yeah, I definitely think CSR is kind of capable of being an impact player. You know, we saw Marcus Docker. He was someone that struggled to really make a dent at Maryland. And then, you know, last night, obviously, he missed the potential game tying shot for Howard there in the first game of the first four there. So definitely, you know, you can go down a level and find guys, and, you know, who knows, maybe they're on True TV in 2-3 years. So so we'll see. But and again, you know, I think when you look back at it, the profile, whatnot, the reason why that they joined the program kind of really all made sense at the time, but just didn't come consistently enough.
No, it didn't. And the Terps, they'll have more coaching changes this offseason. Mike Jones heading to Old Dominion to become the head coach.
Yeah, that was obviously a chance for him to return to his alma mater there. And he obviously got a chance to announce Odell Hodge as his new assistant as well. Former Maryland target, Matt Hodge, whether he ends up remaining committed to Villanova. I think that'll be kind of an interesting storyline, whether he decides to join his dad, Mike Jones, down at ODU. But for the Mike Jones departure, I think once he accepted that, it was about a week or two before the regular season ended, and was expected that he was going to remain on the bench for Maryland and kind of, you know, bounce the two. But that did not come to fruition. And Jones kind of, once he verbally accepted that job, once he was announced as head coach, he kind of hit the ground running with the Monarchs there. So that's key staff vacancy for Kevin Willard to fill this offseason. And again, you know, that's four assistant coaches now that have moved on to become head coaches. I mean, that's a heck of a lot of chemistry and kind of staff firepower that you need to replace. But you know, you as a head coach, you always want to be able to sell that your coaches are advancing, and that's a pretty good selling point there, but just an unreal stretch right there.
It is, and I'm sure Kevin Willard's, you know, going to be after another local recruiter. Losing Tony Skin and Mike Jones back-to-back does not necessarily help any of those pushes on the high school recruiting front. Let's talk about the portal now. Kevin Willard, as you mentioned, Ahmed, earlier, and you've mentioned over on Inside the Black and Gold, already active in the portal evaluating things.
Yeah, Jacoby Gillespie, source confirmed that he will be visiting beginning on Friday. He averaged 17.5 points, 4.2 assists, nearly 4 rebounds, over 2 steals per game during his sophomore season. So he'll have 2 years of eligibility to go at his next stop. He also shot 56% from the field, 39% from deep. So when you think about Maryland's just inability to score outside the paint and really outside of Jameer Young this year, I think every Maryland fan kind of looks at those numbers and says, you know, those are, you know, need that kind of production. So we'll see. Maryland's a first spot for him. Long list of schools have reached out, but it sounds like assistant Greg Manning is leading the charge there. So we'll see. Obviously, a huge role to sell there with Jameer Young, obviously exhausting his eligibility. And just when you look at Jameer Young's his impact and what he was able to do in Willard's system, being a portal guard, I think that's going to give Maryland some firepower in the portal to find their replacement. So Gillespie appears to be that first name or first tangible target. So we will see how this weekend's visit goes.
Yeah, and let's just talk through this for a second. Obviously, we mentioned the two scholarships that are already free. You mentioned the production that's gone to eligibility running out. If Maryland finds a way to, or doesn't find a way to keep Julian Reese, Jordan Geronimo, John Lamont, I mean, it could just keep going and spiraling out of control. With the amount of commits coming in, I mean, do you start to talk about six portal guys coming onto this roster?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, especially if Julian Reese leaves, you have to replace Dante, you have to replace Jameer Young, you have to replace Julian. So that's three guys right there. Noah Batchelor, CSR, that's two more guys. So obviously CSR, you have Derek Queen coming in. And will Maryland look at another project big man? Or, I think maybe a four is more likely than a five for Maryland this year. But yeah, I mean, you know, Noah Batchelor, that production or that potential production does need to be replaced. You know, obviously Jamie Kaiser Jr. will look to take that next step in year two, try to provide that perimeter scoring. But it's definitely looking like it. You know, 2024 right now is complete. Connie Roots was a guy that he became available once he parted ways with Michigan after Juwan Howard's firing. So, you know, we said that 2024 late guys who opt out and become, you know, available late. So we'll see what changes. But for right now, I mean, the portal definitely seems to be the preferred route. And again, you know, two-man class with Queen joining Malachi Palmer there. Willard's going to have to turn to the portal to replace all these guys. And, it's not going to be easy. You're going to be looking for guys that, you know, especially for that Noah Batchelor role, guys that are coming in to find it. Fit roles in the rotation there. So gonna have to take some pretty good scouting here.
Yeah, Aquan Smart's out there. They can always go back there.
I saw that. I think that's what, four schools, 4 years now?
It's something like that. I mean, that's the other thing that you have to factor in. I remember there have been commits, you know, football, basketball wise. That guy's been to four schools in, you know, 4 years or three schools in three. That's not a good look for him. Now when you think about it, there's guys that have transferred that many times in college. I mean, the whole concept of student athlete, and they talked about, you know, portal retention percentage, especially in football, guys that jump in the portal and they never get another shot. If you think about anybody that's been through college and transferred while they're just a normal student, forget it. It's going to take like a guy that does that, you know, 6-7 years to even graduate with a degree. Forget, you know, playing basketball. The whole education piece of it's just done once you start transferring that much. But seems like those days are gone. That's out the window.
Yeah, I think the multi-time transfers have become the new norm now.
Yeah, they certainly have. Flip it over to the football side. Ahmed, another coaching departure to talk about. Our guy Gunter Brewer is heading down to Virginia Tech.
Obviously his contract expired, and there was kind of a lot of stuff that was kind of happening behind the scenes, but obviously ultimately moved on to become that, like you said, new director of high school relations at Virginia Tech there. And with that staff vacancy, hasn't been officially announced by Maryland yet, but Damian Robluski, former assistant over at JMU, is expected to head over. Going to be an assistant of offensive line coach alongside Brian Braswell. How that kind of works out kind of seems to be, you know, remains to be seen there. But again, you know, bolstering the offensive line was something that I heard as a possibility. Juan Castillo, I mentioned this for subscribers. Juan Castillo, before he took the offensive line job over at UCLA, he was actually, you know, kind of volunteering, really just kind of helping out at Maryland behind the scenes. So, just bolstering the offensive line and was really a focus this year. And when you look at the O-line, Alan Heron, Josh Kaltenberger, Elio Ba, all three of those guys, and Kyle Long as well. All of those guys are really stepping into bigger roles, with Kyle Long being the one that started, I believe it was in 10 games last year. So he has some experience to lean on, but it's a tall task. And then when you kind of put that coupled with the new quarterback under center, just, you know, getting that down pat is going to be a big, big, big focus this offseason going into 2024. So two assistant coaches all along the offensive line there, and expected to have Josh Gattis move over from really working with the QB room to now wide receiver room, retaining offensive coordinator title, and was told that Mike Locksley will be working with the QB room quite a bit. And I mentioned it over on the Inside the Black and Gold as well, but Eric Najarian, who obviously former quarterback within the program who transitioned into coaching, you know, I could see him stepping into an elevated role with Kyle Edwards moving on to the become the tight end coach at Richmond. So, you know, kind of a lot of moving pieces, especially with the back end support guys. But I think a lot of this has kind of been in the works for a while. And I kind of mentioned it multiple times on the site, and it seemed like it was just kind of weird. But, you know, even though that Maryland lost a wide receiver coach, I wasn't exactly expecting that Maryland was necessarily going to hire a wide receiver coach. Wasn't always a one-for-one replacement there. So, yeah, obviously, once that is finalized, that is a pretty big hire there for Maryland. Again, it all starts in the trenches. Mike Locksley talked about, you know, rebuilding the trenches when he first joined the program as head coach back in 2019. So, again, it's think a good move for Maryland here.
Yeah, and they were calling Eric Najarian coach when he was still on the team. So, I mean, it's all but fitting for him to end up there. Ahmed, a tradition here on the podcast, another football commit. Tell us about the newest Terp.
Yeah, before we get there, I think, you know, I do like AMAs on the site. And the one question that I always have the toughest time with is, like, who's going to be the next guy? Because a lot of times, especially this time of year, you're going through that time where a lot of guys are setting up OVs. A lot of guys are trying to figure out which offers are committable, where – you know, what, like, where it kind of irons out. And, you know, 2 days before, someone asked, it was like, you know, who's the next commit? And I was like, ah, we'll wait and see right now. I think a lot of these guys are want to just wait until official visit season. And then 2 days later, CJ Smith from Maury High School, transferred from SFA, four-star linebacker, took a visit to campus. Pops has always been really high on Maryland, but by the end of the day, that visit ended up materializing into a commitment there, announced, gave the staff his pledge on March 10th, announced it on March 11th, and 6 foot, 205 pound, expected to join the class as an inside linebacker coach Lance Thompson, meanwhile, was the one who led the way as Maryland beat out top five with Notre Dame, Penn State, Miami, and Alabama in that top group. So I think this is a really quality guy. I mentioned, you know, CJ Smith, Noah Chambers, both those guys have come up a lot. And then when you talk about inside linebacker targets, and CJ, I think, is a guy that, you know, he commanded a lot of the blue blood interest and whatnot. But, you know, things can, of course, always change, you know, 6-9 months from now. But really, the feedback right now is Maryland's got a guy that, one, is solidly in the fold, isn't really looking elsewhere to, you know, find the biggest offer. Like, he's comfortable with Maryland. And two, family's also very high on Maryland. Very high on Maryland, just as a potential option with Mike Locksley in there. And LT has done a really good job recruiting him. That's been a 2-year process since Smith was at SFA before he transferred to Maury, like I said. So really good commitment here. And we'll see who the next one is.
Yeah, we sure will. Spring ball also coming up. Terps kicking things off March 26th. Ahmed, a couple things to watch.
Yeah, I think obviously, like we mentioned, you know, that quarterback room, you know, I've mentioned, put some intel on what the quarterback room is looking like for subscribers over on Inside the Black and Gold, how MJ Morris, what's the feedback around him. So I think I wouldn't expect there to be, you know, any starting decisions coming out of spring ball on the quarterback. You know, I think we start to find the offensive line. I think, like I mentioned, you know, the figuring out, finalizing that starting five is going to be a big thing for Maryland this offseason. I think it's kind of maybe an under-talked about storyline so far. But and again, you know, I think those are kind of the main things. And we'll see who steps up in the wide receiver room as well. Obviously, Caden Prather, Ty Felton, both those guys kind of know what to expect out of them. But will a third guy emerge? Will Shalik Knox will take that next step? Will Octavian Smith, you know, really become consistent there and an impact guy out of the slot? So a lot of questions, but I think all the questions – are rightfully around the quarterback and O-line room right now.
Yeah, I think it's an offseason of opportunity for a lot of guys on this roster that we've been talking about here, really since they committed. You know, you mentioned Octavian Smith, Shalik Knotts to the jump off of the page there. Will somebody like a Dylan Wade really emerge in the tight end room? What goes on there? Again, opportunity is open given the departures from last year. Same thing goes for the defensive backfield. Like we saw Perry Fisher come on at the end of last year, really pop out in the bowl game, a guy who had a lot of buzz, again, multi-position guy, can do a lot coming out of high school. Can he take the next step? Same thing goes if, you know, where Glenn Miller lands. You know, obviously, he proved himself in two areas this last season. Where does he land? Does he go back to the safety room? Does he stay there? And then obviously the big one is the front seven, a ton of experience, a lot of local guys there. They committed to locks early on in this process. Can any of them really take that next step and give themselves opportunity for the next level in their last year in College Park and really show that Maryland can compete in the Big Ten all season in the trenches and show up week in, week out? And that starts in a couple of days, but there's a lot of opportunity out there for guys to really jump off the page.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there. And obviously Ruben Hippolyte, Dante Trader, but those guys coming back and kind of being leaders. Now, I think you're really starting to see, this is really that first wave from Mike Loxley's, you know, when he joined the program, that first wave is really starting to leave the program now. And so I think you're starting to see that culture. But again, you know, you talk about opportunities. Dylan Wade, I think he's the guy that kind of steps into that Preston Howard role. Preston Howard steps into that Corey Dyches role. Will be interesting to see, you know, inside linebacker room. Obviously, you have Ruben Hippolyte, Fanaji Gote, but those guys back. But Caleb Wheatland, you know, Mike Harris, Daniel Wingate, All those guys are kind of capable, were able to kind of step up last year. So ironing out that rotation. And then, like you mentioned, the cornerback room as well. I think Jalen Husky is the only guy that, you know, you kind of pencil in as the starter. But really, when you ask about the cornerback room, really when you ask about a lot of the positions, you know, if you ask about like standouts and, you know, hey, anything is kind of jumping out right now, a lot of it is you can't really tell. But, you know, that cornerback room is kind of where I expect, especially with the Czar Abdul-Rahim back in the fold. And he's kind of particular on how he works with this cornerback. So how that cornerback room kind of works out and kind of how it develops, and which of the underclassmen can really step up, I think will be interesting. You know, Michael Mormon is a guy that, you know, we'll see. Maybe he can be a candidate to, you know, field punts. But again, you know, I think a lot of these guys, these young underclassmen, have a chance to really make a name for themselves. We'll see what Braden Wazowski can do as well.
Yeah, well, a lot of guys, a lot of potential there. It's just who's going to step up, who's going to take the role going into the spring and then into the fall. And, of course, Ahmed's got all that coverage for you on Inside the Black and Gold. AG, anything else to add here on the pod?
No, I'm just trying to stay on top of the portal frenzy for now. So until then, we shall see what shakes out with spring ball.
Yeah, enjoy some of the great days in sports. NCAA tournament ball coming up this weekend. A lot to do that. Everybody stay safe out there. I know Ben Page is hosting a big thing up in Frederick for all of you that love to gamble and can afford to take the day off on Friday. He's got a great event up there. As always, like the pod where you can, leave us a review. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.